Good morning and welcome to this edition of Heart of the Earth. My name is Lauren Schmidt, and I want to thank Agnes Patak for asking me to host today's special show, where we will be discussing a very important and powerful new film, Firelighters: Fire is Medicine. For generations, Native peoples burned the land as a way of taking care of it. But as governments stepped in to restrict controlled burns, this practice went unacknowledged. Now, Yurok, Karuk, and Hoopa women are reclaiming fire and their tribe's way of life. Today, we will be joined by the stars of the new film and the movers and shakers with the Cultural Fire Management Council, Elizabeth Azuz, Director of Traditional Fire, and Margot Robbins, the Executive Director. Firelighters will premiere worldwide on November 18th. However, North Coast residents will have a very special opportunity this Saturday, November 16th, for a community screening of the film at the Arcata Theater Lounge, featuring the women with the Cultural Fire Management Council, whose mission is to facilitate the practice of cultural burning on the Yurok Reservation and ancestral lands, which will lead to a healthier ecosystem for all plants and animals, long-term fire protection for residents, and provide a platform that will in turn support the traditional hunting and gathering activities of Yurok. And this morning, I am also joined by my co-host, Perry Lincoln, the Director of Native Health and Native Hands. Good morning, Perry.
And then, so what I said was, "Kot" means okay, let's do this. And Jongenda is good morning. Ashoye Perry is, my name is Perry, and Shikinestet means I'm Kinestet, but we also call ourselves Wailaki today, and Tai Chi Kea is, our people call themselves red, mixes with water people. Choget Holabet is the native name for Native Health and Native Hands.
Thanks for being my co-host, Perry. Now I have the distinct honor of introducing Margot Robbins. Good morning, Margot.
Ayikui, Nicknow Margot Robbins. I am the Executive Director for the Cultural Fire Management Council, cultural practitioner, a mom, and a grandma. As part of the Cultural Fire Management Council, we have been burning for over 10 years, zero escapes. We focus primarily on the Upper Yurok Reservation, and the places we burn are culturally important because they have the resources necessary for us to continue our cultural lifeways. So as time has passed, we have become more and more knowledgeable about the intricacies of cultural burning in our homelands, the different kinds of species, what kind of fire that they like, what time of year, and what time is of year is not a good time to burn, that it could actually harm them. And so as a basket weaver, it is critically important for us to have hazel sticks, the fresh new shoots that come up after fire. And so that was one of the things that got me on this path, because I am a basket weaver as well as several other people in the community. And that population of basket weavers is growing because of the work, the burning that we have been doing here on the reservation, where once basket materials were almost non-existent, they are plentiful enough for us to not only weave all the baskets we want, but to invite our neighboring tribes as well. And so that's a really good feeling to have, knowing that the people that we employ here on the reservation, which we use a totally local workforce, that the work that we are doing is so meaningful to the community. Thank you, Lauren, and I'm really glad to be here, by the way.
very excited that you are here too. Thank you, Margot. We're not only for joining us here, but really working to bring fire back to our landscape, which I want to dive a lot deeper into later into this broadcast, as this is something that's been happening for centuries and then became absent. And of course, the strength of the Cultural Fire Management Council to help bring it back. And before we dive into all of that, I want to throw it over to the Director of Traditional Fire. Good morning, Elizabeth.
Yes, good afternoon. Thanks for having me. I'm really honored to be here. My name is Elizabeth Azuz, and I am the Director of Traditional Fire and the Treasurer to the Board of Cultural Fire Management Council. I came on basically really excited about this. When I knew Margo was doing this, I was working on another project, and an elder had asked me to, when I was done, to help Margo, and I waited patiently for her to approach me and talk to me about what was going on, and very excited to join the team. I've been working with fire since I was a very little person, and this is near and dear to my heart. And so watching our community thrive and grow from this has been one of my greatest joys, because I get to see young local people have jobs and, you know, increase their families' ability to live well here on the river and not have to leave. It's been really great watching all of the practitioners coming out and gathering and seeing the new younger generation step up. Recently, I attended a Weaver's retreat at Prairie Creek at Wolf Creek Wilderness School, I believe it's called. And it was really nice to see all the ages, from children into elders, there learning how to process materials and how to weave and just spending time together and enjoying the environment. So it's been a great joy for me to watch all of this happen in our community and to know that we were the ones that are here helping it happen, watching the community grow, watching the fires tend the environment has been really overwhelming for me. So recently we've had quite a few burns, and it's nice to know with the burn boss now we can continue to do our work whenever we have an open window. And having everybody on board with the same idea and the same goals is definitely moving our future forward in a better way.
First of all, congratulations on the new film, Firelighters, Fire is Medicine. But also, I hope you've been enjoying the burn window that's been unfolding this fall. I know there's been a lot of opportunity for fire here in Southern Humboldt, so I hope it's been the same for you all in the North. Before we dive deeper into fire and bringing it back to the landscape, I'm hoping we could focus on the film and speak to how the Cultural Fire Management Council was first approached by the filmmaker, Sandy Zeig, and what that process looked like. And, you know, now this will be shown across the world and on PBS. If you want to share a little behind the scenes on how this first got started.
It focuses on the cultural use of fire, and I think she reached out to Elizabeth about coming to do some video while we were burning. And so in the interest of educating the general public about the need for more fire on the land in order to help ecosystems become more resilient and healthy, we said, yes, you can come and film while we are burning. And so basically, we just do what we do. We're not, you know, out there to make a movie. We're out there to take care of the land, which takes care of the people. And Sandy came with her helpers and was really non-obtrusive in getting the footage that she was able to get and put it together in a really meaningful way. And basically, we don't really have anything to do with the publicity and of the movies and where they are shown. So Sandy made all of those connections with PBS and the other places that it will be shown. And we're just in it telling our story about the necessity of reclaiming our right as Native people to utilize fire and how we were able to reclaim that right here in our homelands and to share the good word that if we're able to do it, other people can too.
Yeah, so Sandy actually did reach out to me, and her approach was that she had directed Apache 8 about the all-female firefighting unit that had protected their reservation for like 30 years. And it kind of piqued my interest and curiosity. And so when I approached Margo, I was like, what do you think about this? And like she was saying at the time, it was like we kind of need to get the word out about what we're doing and what good fire can do. And who knew it was going to lead to this, to be honest? I mean, I had absolutely no idea she was going to throw us out there worldwide. But it's really exciting to be involved in this project and to watch it evolve over the time. It seems like it's been forever that we were filming. Margo and I were wandering around the mountains, redoing multiple things so that they could get all the shots they needed. And I was laughing recently. I was in the high country and I had pointed out to my partner that I had driven up and down the straight stretch multiple times so they could get the shots on drone and on camera. And it just felt so funny at that time to be thinking about it. So now to know that it will be coming out in a film and we'll be there for everyone to see it. It's really exciting to know that our work is getting out there and that people will begin to understand how important it is for all of us to carry this forward.
The film's byline reads, quote, "For centuries, most landscapes in North America were shaped by fire, between lightning strikes and indigenous burns. Indigenous people had deep knowledge of the art of using fire and still do today," end quote. So with that, I'm hoping you can share more on the history of fire on our landscape and how it has been able to create balance for the land, the animals, and the people.
I've been thinking about this a lot actually recently. So I spent a lot of time with my elders, learning to gather and process and hearing the stories and listening to the songs and all of the different opinions that each of us had on how to care for the land. And it was really interesting speaking with some elders recently. I actually had a gentleman ask me if I remembered hearing women speak in a different dialect or sing different songs when they were together versus what they did when they were with the whole family, when they were with the men and the children and everything. And interesting enough, it triggered a moment sitting underneath an elder relative's grapevine patch where she would sit and weave during the day. And listening to the aunties talk and listening to their stories and talking about how they used to burn and restore certain areas and materials that they took care of. And I never really thought about it until this movie is coming out. And it's made me really backtrack in my mind how our stories carry us and how that information travels from generation to generation. And so it's, like I said, really exciting for me because at that Weaver's Retreat, I got to spend time with my children and my grandchildren and a bunch of little relatives. And it was nice to see their interest in what we're doing and realize that our work is so important to every generation.
Fire was given to us as humans the beginning of time. Was during that time overlap when the pre-human race of spirit beings that we call Wage was here, this place. And it's given as a gift to not only keep us warm and to cook our food, but also to take care of the living beings around us. Fire is one of the most incredible forces of nature that there is. It has the power to create new life and also to wipe things away. It affects the soil, the air, the water, the plants, the animals, and the people. So, as everybody knows, the United States is a vast land, And at one time, Native tribes took care of all of it almost with fire, because that was the readily available, most effective means of taking care of all of creation. And so at one time, we burned from the high mountains down to the coastline. Not everything at once. It was a mosaic of burns, and the vegetation was kept under control that way. And the plants were limited to specific areas that they were meant to be. So the prairies were not overcrowded with fir trees because of the fire that was annually or every other year set on the prairies to keep them prairies. All of the things that we depend on to live, our food, our clothing, our medicine, our basket weaving materials, all of those things were helped. Kept healthy and readily available because of the annual use of fire on the land. And each tribe and each village would take care of certain areas within their home territories to keep the land healthy and the water and the ash and the charcoal left on the land purified the water. It's a really intricately woven mesh of all things in creation that fire tends to.
Diving deeper into that, a lot of contemporary ideas of fire, post-colonization, settlers really have a negative association with fire, death, and destruction. We have the term catastrophic fire, mega fires. But firelighters, however, argue that fire can heal the land. This is not a new concept. But can you help differentiate the two and explain to folks how fire is a critical tool? And like you water a garden, you need to fire your forest.
One of the primary reasons that we are in this wildfire crisis that we're in is because of fire exclusion. It was a very misguided idea to try to keep fire out of the forest. And so, what happened with the fire exclusion era is that the vegetation just has been growing for over 100 years unchecked. And so what we have is closely packed brush and trees, which was exacerbated exponentially by the timber industry planting every place with trees and the policy that if you log, you have to densely replant it. And so those policies and those misguided forest management practices is what has led us to this place where we're at now with what they call mega fires that continue to get bigger and burn more things that at one time it didn't happen. We don't even have a word for wildfire in our language, as do many other tribes. I don't know of any that actually do, because when you have regular fire regime, you don't have the buildup of live and dead vegetation that we currently have on the forest floor. And you don't see much on the news about people taking care of the land. It's people like Sandy and other videographers who have really gone out of their way to present this information to a public that all they see in the news is these raging wildfires. And so that's their experience of fire. They have no clue of the benefits that it can provide when applied under conditions that are conducive to to keeping it within the space that you're trying to burn. And so the public has had a really lopsided view of what fire really is. And also for over, however long ago smoky was invented with the fire is bad, only you can prevent forest fire. That's like five or six generations of people who have been taught that fire has ba is bad. And that's a hard thing to overcome, especially when you couple that with the news coverage of only wildfires. And so, we are trying to do our part with the help of videographers like Sandy Zig and others to spread the word that not only is fire good, but it is a necessary part of healthy ecosystems and wildfire prevention. One of the few things that will change the course of a wildfire is when it meets up with the place that has already been burned, because there's not as much to feed it. And so then the intensity drops down to a degree that the firefighters are able to get it under control.
Something that's really important to me, and I think Margot also, is we teach our younger generations basically from preschool or Head Start into the university. We bring out young people and we teach them about the importance of caring for the land and the environment. It's really interesting for me when I do go out into what I call civilization, because obviously we live in the very rural area, but our children have a broader understanding of their environment, of the natural resources here and what they can and can't receive from that. Whereas children out in civilization have absolutely no idea. They've been brought up to be frightened of fire. They've been brought up to not understand fire. And that's really detrimental to their learning, because they only hear, like Margot said, one side of what is going on. And when in reality, there are many ways to care for the planet. And if you look at indigenous cultures throughout history, they have always maintained their environment with fire. They've always cared for their foods, their medicine, the water, the land, the trees, everything with fire. And so we have to get back to a point where we're teaching our younger generations and working with them and guiding them through this process so that in the future we all have a beautiful place to call home.
I want to ask when and why did our cultural fire stop?
Was in the late 1800s that the pressure on Native people to stop burning occurred. And from the late 1800s up through 1940s, past the 1940s even, people burned at risk of being shot. That was the punishment for trying to take care of the land with fire. And so that was a pretty big deterrent. And then after that time period, instead of shooting Native people, they pass laws that send us to prison if we're caught lighting fires. And so that has been, for the most part, a pretty effective deterrent to people putting fire on their land. There's a few people that would continue to burn what you might call underground. So, doing it in secret because the need for the benefits that fire produces was so great that they was risk willing to risk that. There was actually a time in the 60s when, like, CAL FIRE and the Forest Service had some enlightenment about the benefits of fire and did not punish people for it. In fact, Bertha Peters talks about when the CAL FIRE chief used to come help her burn. And then they, after a period of time, they shipped him off to some other assignment, and then all of that stopped. And I've heard CAL FIRE talk about it as well, and they don't even really understand why that practice went away, but they do acknowledge it.
To quickly clarify, the people who were threatening Indigenous people, was this the Forest Service, law enforcement, or a combination of the two?
So I based that statement on a memo that the head of Forest Service sent out to his underlings that any Native person saw that was seen building a fire should be shot on sight. I'm not sure who all, in addition to Forest Service, was enforcing that.
I just all of a sudden felt triggered. It's so strange. I do have family members that cannot touch matches, flint, a lighter. They can't heat, put a warming fire in their home. They can't start a barbecue. They can't do any of that for fear of going back to prison because of using fire. And so those stories are traumatic and painful for a lot of people, and our history carries a lot of trauma with it. And so that type of trauma in itself alone just seems like one more unnecessary step to controlling the Indigenous environment.
Elizabeth, like you said, a lot of this can be extremely triggering, and we don't want to sugarcoat. Obviously, there was genocide and ethnocide that occurred right here on our very landscape, and a lot of work still needs to be done to right those wrongs. Yet, despite that historical trauma, you both have been able to break barriers and really help to launch this movement, which, pun intended, has caught on like fire. I'm hoping you can touch on this movement to bring fire back, how it began, and what this journey has looked like.
We didn't actually start this movement when our community decided as a group that the number one priority was to bring fire back to our homelands. There was our neighbors were had already been burning for a while, the Mid-Klamath Watershed Council, in cooperation with the Kudu tribe. And so we was able to tag in with them and get support in how to build our program by having that connection with them. And so we would be like invited with them to go talk to the head of CAL FIRE and was introduced into those circles of decision makers. And that was really critical. And there were others as well, the Nature Conservancy, which is a national and international network, has the Fire Learning Network, and they have been doing prescribed burns with different people all over the United States and Australia and different places. And so we cannot claim to be the beginners of this movement, but we did join the movement and we joined it in a big way. And every time somebody wants to come interview us or do a video or ask, invite us to go talk about fire, we always say yes because of the importance of spreading the word that the land needs fire, and it's our responsibility as human beings to help put that fire on the land. We can't wait for lightning to do all the work, because lightning isn't going to strike it everywhere. That we need to stand up and assume our responsibility as human beings to restore the ecosystem function and take care of our land, that takes care of the people.
I want to remind our listeners, you have it tuned to KMUD Garberville 91.1 on this Wednesday morning at the bottom of the hour. I am joined by my co-host, Perry Lincoln of Native Health and Native Hands, and today we are speaking with the movers and shakers and lighters of the Cultural Fire Management Council, Elizabeth Azuz, the Director of Traditional Fire, and Margot Robbins, the Executive Director. The new film, Firelighters, Fire is Medicine, shows how these incredible women are reclaiming fire and their tribe's way of life here on the North Coast. The film will be screened locally Saturday, November 16th at the Arcata Theater Lounge and across the world on PBS on November 18th. Perry, if you want to take the next question.
What, if any, were the barriers then, and if there's any now that you can discuss with us, to share with us?
I think we had a great deal of permitting barriers, to be honest. You know, the, as we call it, the white tape was really cumbersome. You know, just building those relationships with those organizations is what helped us. I'd like to say we have a really decent working relationship with CAL FIRE and the Forest Service, state parks. They've come to work with us. We've gone to burn with them. And building a great relationship with Humboldt County Air Quality was, you know, key to being able to help our organization move forward. You know, as a sovereign nation, the Yurok tribe, we have our own air quality program. And so the county defers to our tribe for our air quality permits. So that's also, you know, a really good step for us. Just building those relationships, reaching out to people, working with people, and making sure that, you know, we follow all the rules, the regulations, make sure all the paperwork's in place, the permits are in place, and that all organizations are happy before we even set fire to the land. That has helped us grow in such a way that our organization has become one of the leaders in firelighting.
As a community group with no money and no political clout, there were plenty of barriers. But we refused to give up. We were determined that we will bring fire back to our land, and that we would go over, around, or through whatever barriers presented themselves. And so one of the barriers was, of course, not having any money to fund what we were doing. And so we just all volunteered. We volunteered for 6 or 7 years to carry this movement forward. And then we sometimes a barrier would be the unbelievers, people who didn't think we was going to be able to establish a return of fire to our land. And they would, you know, just be such an encumbrance until finally we would say, look, you can either help or get out of our way, because we are bringing fire back to our land and we're not going to turn in any other direction. This is what we're doing. The Nature Conservancy have been the most incredible partners for us in helping us to realize our dream of burning every year, having more hazel than we need, just moving forward. They have shared their expertise and knowledge about fire, as well as financial assistance to bring the resources that we needed to have on site here so that we could burn. And so that was a barrier, is that we didn't have any trained, qualified people, according to the state and federal standards qualified, I should say, to put fire on the land. And so we needed to have those people trained up, and we needed to learn, you know, who has authority over fire and what is it that's required in order to not go to prison when you start a burn. And so those were all big barriers that we researched and developed partnerships with people that were knowledgeable about and supportive of our cause, and just the sometimes pure stubbornness and also faith in Creator, that we're doing Creator's work. This is God's work we're doing. This is spiritual work. And so we don't deviate from the path.
You're saying that firefighters and firelighters now work together because of this understanding that you're bringing to them?
So you actually have to have firefighter qualifications in order to burn during the time that CAL FIRE has fire restrictions on, which is a good part of the year. So they don't actually at this point have qualifications that are just for prescribed burns. You have to go through the firefighter training type stuff to get entry-level qualifications, and also to increase those qualifications up to the point where you can oversee a burn. Except, actually, as I think about it, there was new legislation passed last year that recognizes traditional fire practitioners as having the same qualifications and expertise as state or federally certified burn boss. So that was a huge step in the right direction. But you have to have experience burning in order to be recognized as a traditional fire practitioner. And the legislation says that you need to be recognized as a fire practitioner, either by a federally recognized tribe or a native-led organization.
Thank you. Thank you. So how does fire decolonize the food system and help create food sovereignty, in your words, or both of your words?
This sounds like an Elizabeth topic. She's all about food sovereignty.
Yeah, that's actually one of my big things is, you know, making sure that we have our traditional foods. And I spent quite a bit of time before I came on with Margo working with the community gardens and trying to establish gardens here locally in our extension of the Yurok Reservation. And it's really nice to see now that the tribe has stepped in and taken that over, that they're providing those foods to the elders, to the community. They're doing traditional food workshops and harvest feasts and things of these natures. And it's really nice to see that they're able to provide all of those traditional foods that they gathered, some of them from our burn sites, some from other tribes' burn sites, that the animals are healthier because of the fire. You know, they're able to provide healthy fish and deer meat to the people. I was telling Margo before, I had this elder gentleman stop me, and he was just so happy that he was able to get a deer that had no tumors and it was really healthy, and it almost brought him to tears. He was so excited about it. And that made me feel real good about what we're doing, because sometimes I just get, I don't know about Margo, but I get really tired and frustrated at people saying, oh, you guys will never be able to do this. You guys don't know what you're doing. You guys just need to stop. But then you get that one person who says, oh my God, what you're doing is amazing. Thank you so much, and don't quit. And that pushes me right back up to the top of the hill again, where I'm like, okay, I'm ready to go. Let's get this going. Let's get this food and medicine. Let's get these basket materials out there. Let's keep our people healthy. And so, yeah, the food sovereignty thing is huge. You know, the fire has been making our foods healthier again, our medicines, our mushrooms, our animals. It's amazing. Could just go on for days.
Yeah. Thank you.
Something you both taught me at the Mateel a few years ago during a cultural fire workshop was the differences between prescribed fire and cultural fire. And I know you mentioned that the MCWIC and the Nature Conservancy are doing a lot of great work, but that's a lot of the prescribed fire. And what you're doing is cultural fire. So I'm wondering if you can touch on that and speak to the differences.
Cultural fire is place-based burning. So it is the native people from that place doing the burn. And for cultural purposes, those purposes might be for basket materials, for traditional foods, for medicines, for home protection. That is a cultural burn. Cultural burns don't actually require a written burn plan, and they don't require a permit. However, if you want to access the liability fund from CAL FIRE, if you sign your cultural burn up with them, then you can be covered with their liability coverage. It doesn't require a burn plan, but they do want to know, you know, like, how are you going to keep it under control? So it's not a formal burn plan, but you just give a little information about it. The other thing is that even though it doesn't require a permit, it's a good idea to give CAL FIRE a courtesy call on the day that you're burning, because if they see smoke and don't know what's creating it, then they will likely send out a helicopter and personnel. Whereas if you let them know, hey, we're burning today at such and such a place, if somebody calls in smoke, they're just like, oh, that's just cultural fire they're burning today. So prescribed fire has a written burn plan, and it is done by state and or nationally qualified firefighters. The burn plan outlines how many resources you need to have on hand, how many fire engines, how many qualified people. It gives very clear parameters on the conditions, the weather conditions that are acceptable, how hot it can be, how hard the wind can blow, how dry the fuels can be or wet. And so it is a very specific document that needs to be signed off by a burn boss that, yes, this meets the all of the components of a formal burn plan. So, and often you'll see prescribed burns primarily focus in on fuel reduction for wildfire prevention, but sometimes they are also for ecological purposes. So the benefits of both prescribed and cultural burns are kind of the same. So when we're doing cultural burns, we are reducing the amount of flammable material on the land. So it is wildfire prevention. And when the agencies are doing their prescribed burns, they are producing culturally important species. They may not know which ones they are or how to harvest them, but definitely the benefits are there.
Thank you. I'd like to add a little bit to that. And in our area, we have kind of a unique area, because for the Wailaki people, we don't have we don't own any ancestral homeland. So, like, just to add to what you were saying about letting people know, letting the agencies, we like to work with the agencies because of the support, because most of the land is either on, you know, like one place that the only place that we've done so far is a community park. And it's really small right now. And, you know, we're trying to enlarge the burn area of that. But we do include and really want to kind of teach why and what we're doing, so that the community in the area isn't afraid, like you were talking about earlier, people being afraid of fire because they don't understand it. So we're trying to use the opportunity there at that park to teach that fire is a safe thing if we can use it in a safe kind of way, and it should be used, and people can kind of, you know, come to the park and see the advantages of what fire can bring and how the people can control the fire. And, you know, we have all the support from the fire departments in the area and Cal Fire. So it's kind of a unique situation, like I said, because of, you know, we have to get access to the land. So basically it all has to fall under all those regs. And it's been working out. We've only been doing it for a couple of years now, learning and getting our guys trained and finding more people that want to get trained so that we can have a really beneficial crew and have people understanding what it is that we're doing. And I want to say thank you again for coming and giving that the talk that you guys did. People are still talking about that, you know, and it really makes a big difference when you have people come and share. I really appreciate that.
It's always so exciting when we go someplace and talk about fire, and then later, you know, a year or however much longer down the road, we hear that those people that we talked with, their community is burning. I mean, I just love that.
And I got to give Perry some super credit here, because following that event at the Mateel that I previously mentioned, there is now a Wailaki cultural fire crew, which is absolutely amazing.
That's awesome.
Yeah, thank you. I want to say that I really appreciate the in-depth answers that everyone gave. It's just so meaningful to know that there's help, to know that there's support, to know that there's people with open minds now, more and more, that will help, will support us. Like you're saying, State Park and Six Rivers National Forest Service is actually thinking of having us come and work for them, and hopefully it can be done. So I'm hoping that we're able to do that in the coming year or a couple of years, however long it takes, and with the Nature Conservancy on board also. You know, I've met some of those people, and you know, they're supportive of us, so it's all coming together. And I think the questions that I had all got answered. And like you guys were saying, you can go on and on with it. At some point, we'll probably ask for more, you know, meaning. So thank you.
Thank you, Perry.
Thank you so much. And I'm so excited to be with you all on November 16th in Arcata this Saturday at the screening of Firelighters, Fire is Medicine. I'm so excited to continue this conversation there. And I want to thank you for all that you are doing in our community. And getting close to the top of the hour here, I'm hoping you could share your final thoughts or speak to anything I might have missed that you would like the Cayman listeners to know.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to add, when we were talking before we started recording, I haven't watched it at all. So I'm going to be just as surprised and amazed as the rest of you when it reviews. As far as the non-Indigenous population, Cultural Fire has a number of non-Indigenous personnel. They love the river, the mountains, the environment as much as we do, and their hopes and dreams are showed when they're out on the land working with fire and working with the community and feeling like they're part of this environment. And so I'd just like to say to anyone and everyone out there, you know, fire doesn't belong to just the Indigenous people. But as long as we respect her and care for her in the way that the Indigenous people do, she'll work that way for all of us. And so let's carry that forward and, you know, make sure that everyone knows that this is everyone's responsibility to care for the mother.
Good words, Elizabeth. I think that there are many different things that non-Native people can do to help support the fire on the land movement. And one of the most important things is to help spread the word that the land needs fire in order to be healthy, that not all fire is bad, that there is such a thing as good fire. And It's interesting to learn that even the wildfires that rage, 60% of the land that's burned, at least 60%, produces beneficial results. Of course, would prefer not to have those raging wildfires, but even those big, hot, intense ones do produce beneficial results after a period of time. I think it's important for people to start wrapping their mind around the right to use fire. The average person should have the right to use fire to take care of their land and protect their home against wildfire. And there should be opportunities available for them to learn how to use fire safely. We are one small organization, and we do provide opportunities for people that want to learn, but we can only train so many people, and so that piece of it needs to be expanded. So as more and more people start clamoring for the right to use fire as individuals, the more opportunities will open up.
One last piece I'd like to add, Lauren. Our botanist, Claire Brown, is one of the most amazing people you want to meet. Her love for the plants and the species in our environment is just like watching her raise children. She loves them that much. She talks to them as their people. In one of our units, she found 83 native species and only one invasive, which was the Himalayan blackberry. She was so excited on that day. It literally was like she had birthed her own child and was caring for it right at that moment. And that to me is one of the most amazing things to watch, because when you watch Claire work with the plants and teach all of the fire effects monitors that she's training, that same love goes into every one of those people. She instills that in them. And it's one of the most amazing things to watch, because people leave their training in Cultural Fire Management Council with a whole new open mind about what they can make happen in their own environment. And so we can only do three trainings a year as far as training exchanges. We had to do three because we didn't have enough time to train as many people that wanted to attend. But we also do aspiring firelighter trainings. We do cooperative burns with other agencies. And I know there are other prescribed fire associations across the country now. And if every last one of them sets their mind to that goal, imagine how many firelighters we can train.
I love it. And if there's aspiring firelighters or other supporters out there listening, do you hope they attend the watch party on November 16th and join the conversation?
Absolutely, they should come.
Great. I cannot wait. I am really looking forward to this. And again, congratulations. This is so deserved and so needed, not only here in our community, but really across the world. So I appreciate everything you're doing for our local community and beyond.
Thank you, Lauren. Thanks, Perry.
Oklahoma.
Wakla.
Thank you, Lauren. Thank you, Perry, for having us. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you. Bye.
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 Do.
I want to thank you, listeners, for joining us today on this special edition of Heart of the Earth. It has been an honor to host this conversation with the incredible women leading the movement to reclaim cultural fire practices. I want to express my deepest gratitude to our guests, Elizabeth Azuz and Margot Robbins, for sharing their wisdom and passion with us. And a special thank you to my co-host, Perry Lincoln. Remember, the world premiere of Firelighters, Fire is Medicine, is on November 18th. But if you are in the North Coast region, do not miss the chance to see it early this Saturday, November 16th, at the Arcata Theater Lounge. It's a unique opportunity to experience the film and participate in an intimate question and answer session with the Cultural Fire Management Council. All proceeds from the ticket sales go to the council, and you can buy them online in advance at arcadatheater.com. We actually have a special thank you gift to our listeners, courtesy of the director of the film, Sandy Zeig, who is giving away 2 tickets to the film. So the first person who can call 707-923-3911 and tell us the name of the film we've been discussing this morning, we'll get that ticket. So 2 winners, call 707-923-3911 and tell us the name of the film that will be shown on Saturday, November 16th at the Arcata Theater Lounge. Doors open at 5. Again, thank you all so much. I've been Lauren Schmidt. Stay tuned for Women on Wednesday.
Indigenous people, shine your light, we are equal. I remember the days when our prayers were illegal. I remember the days when being Indian was lethal. Yeah, we had a rough past, but get ready for the sequel. Get ready for the glorious comeback of our people, oh yeah. Rise up, all you warriors of love, all you answers to the prayers of our ancestors from above. I can feel it in my heart, can you feel it in your blood? I can hear the seventh fire calling us to wake up. All nations rise, rise up, 'cause now's your time. We don't have to hide anymore, 'cause now's the time. All nations rise, rise up, 'cause now's your time. We don't have to hide anymore, 'cause now's the time. With forgiveness as my bow and my prayers as my arrows, pull them back and let go. I watch them fly like sparrows, have hope. Yeah, have hope. With compassion as my shield and faith down to my marrow, I will walk the pollen path even when it gets narrow. Yeah, yeah, I resurrect. Yes, you can bet that we seen the single mama raising children on the res. We seen domestic violence tear apart what we have left. We seen the alcohol take it all and leave us dead. We seen the children take their lives when they can't take the dread anymore. It's a war. Can't take the dread anymore. It's a war. No, we can't take the dread anymore. It's a war. No, we can't take the dread anymore. It's a war. Yeah. It's a war, but we've seen it all before. And now we know we can change it, 'cause that's why we were born. We know we are the ones that we have been waiting for. We are the ones Grandma has been praying for. So rise up, all you warriors of love, all you answers to the prayers of our ancestors from above. I can feel it in my heart, can you feel it in your blood? I can hear the seventh fire calling us to wake up, wake up.
Pueblo hermoso, levántense, es nuestro tiempo. No tienes que esconderte más, ahora es nuestro tiempo.
Mujer indígena, tú eres tan sagrada. Traigas medicina de tu suelo todavía, a pesar del abuso de tu cuerpo y tu tierra. Respetamos tus ancestros y la suya cultura. Hombre indígena, tú eres honorable, y yo veo la fuerza que todavía sobrevive, a pesar del abuso de tu raza venerable. Yo respeto tus ritos, tus danzas, tus padres. Somos guerreros del amor y guerreros de la paz, sí, no vamos a escondernos más. Somos guerreros del amor y guerreros de la paz, sí, no vamos a escondernos más.
They say that history is written by the victors. But how can there be a victor when the war isn't over? The battle has only just begun, and Creator is sending his very best warriors. And this time, it isn't Indians versus cowboys. No, this time, it is all the beautiful races of humanity together on the same side, and we are fighting to replace our fear with love. And this time, bullets, arrows, and cannonballs won't save us. The only weapons that are useful in this battle are the weapons of truth, faith, and compassion.